The soldiers broke over the last rise and into view of the Colorado Crossing. The settler's cabin was ablaze. Gideon saw a flurry of activity, men, horses, all in a swirl. Well beyond the river, a faint dust cloud betrayed the stolen remuda, whipped into a hard run. Behind it, the warriors were on horseback or quickly getting mounted, spreading into a defensive line to protect the retreating herders. One sickening glance showed him that the two white men were dead. Their bodies lay twisted where they had been flung aside after the scalping. They bristled with feathered shafts. Beside the blazing cabin, Gideon came upon the woman, naked, a single arrow in her back. Her eyes and mouth were frozen open in horror. Gideon's last meal almost came up.
Yeah!
The sound of Esau Nettle's voice brought him out of the numbness. The sergeant rushed after two Indians. One, who wore a buffalo horn headdress, held something in front of him on his horse, something that fluttered like hawk wings, a dress. The Indian had the little girl. Esau Nettles was fully 30 yards in the lead when Big Napoleon hit the river in pursuit. The sluggish red current hardly seemed to slow him. The black horse was moving up the north bank before Gideon's brown struck the water. Gideon spurred across to try to help Nettles. He saw the second Indian fit an arrow to his bow and let it fly. The sergeant almost lost his saddle, grabbing at the neck of the black horse. The Indian reached quickly back to his quiver and brought another arrow over his shoulder. Nettles, lying over the horse's neck, fired his pistol at close range. The Indian dropped the bow and twisted half around, hard hit. The other warrior seemed to pause a moment, undecided. Then he threw the girl to the ground and raced to his wounded companion. He flung an arm around the man's shoulder to help steady him so he could stay astride. The two were gone as fast as their horses could run. Gideon could not tell whether Nettles fell from Napoleon or dismounted so quickly that he could not keep his footing. The sergeant pushed to his knees.
Missy, come to me quick!
The child scrambled to the downed soldier and clung to him. The sergeant folded his arms about her.
Go on and cry, child. Just cry it all out.
Gideon reined up. The shaft of an arrow protruded from Nettles' bleeding hip. Impatiently, Nettles waved him on.
Get on after them! Kill them, goddammit! Kill them all!
Gideon wanted to stay and help, but he dared not defy the command in those furious eyes. With one foot already out of the stirrup, he heeled the brown into a run again. Much of the troop had moved ahead of him, but the brown quickly pulled forward into the ragged line. Big Dempsey and Little Finley were both trailing. The lieutenant reined over close.
Are they all right?
Sergeant taking an arrow in his hip.
Damn!
That was all he had time for. The lead troopers had come within range of the rear guard Comanches. They began firing, and the Indians' arrows fell short. Gradually, the Indians dispersed, and the unrelenting pressure forced them to abandon the horse herd. They escaped with only the animals they rode. Gideon had become separated from the lieutenant. He and Jimbo and the scout Maloney spurred hard to get around the tiring remuda. Gideon could feel the labor in the brown's slowing stride, and he knew Maloney had been wise about saving the horses. It was obvious that they would not catch the Indians, not now. But they had retaken the stolen stock. Gideon had been on the frontier long enough to learn that restoration of property went a long way in the absence of revenge. The runaways slowed. Those in the rear dropped to a trot, then to a walk. Before long, the horses were stretched out for half a mile, all walking. Jimbo made a wide swinging motion with his arm.
We can handle them now, Gid. Let's be getting around them.
By the time the riders circled the horses and turned their leaders back toward the river, sweat was dripping from Gideon's mount. Maloney made note of it with a satisfied nod.
You see what I told you, boy?
Gideon saw no point in acknowledgement, for he had not argued in the first place. But Maloney assumed apology where none was offered, and he was feeling expansive.
I don't know as we killed any boys, but we hit them where they holler the loudest. He kills an Indian soul to give up a horse he stole fair and square.
There's dead folks back yonder. Getting these horses don't help them any.
But you tried, boys. Now I gotta give you credit. You done better than I thought was in you. It wasn't in the stars for them poor people, that's all.
Gideon was surprised.
You believe in such as that? Things being told by the stars?
It had long been drummed into him that superstition was the special province of black people. Big Ella had always called it the field hand's folly. She didn't believe in any of it, except black cats.
Well, I believe everything that's gonna happen to a man's already rode up yonder. There ain't nothing he can do to get away from it.
He noticed that Jimbo carried his rifle in his lap, the muzzle pointed Maloney's way.
Hey, boy, you point that thing some other place. You want to kill a man before his natural time?
From afar off, Gideon heard the bugle sounding recall. Stray troopers began to make their way back, abandoning the chase. Hollander observed the recovered horses from some distance. He dispatched several troopers, including Dempsey and Finley, to help bring them in while he returned to the crossing and its carnage. The chase had gone so rapidly that Gideon had only the vaguest conception of the ground covered. It seemed to him that it took an hour to return to the river. He tried to locate Sergeant Nettles through the smoke of the ruined cabin. He saw two men digging a hole back away from the riverbank. Three blanket-covered forms lay nearby. He spotted Nettles then, sitting on the ground beside the settler's wagon, his back braced against the wheel. The little girl huddled with him, her head against his shoulder. Hollander followed Gideon's gaze.
Go on down there if you want to, Charger.
Thank you.
He rode down to the homestead. Nettles looked up as Gideon swung from the sweating brow.
We taking the horses back from him?
Nettles' eyes were only half open, but Gideon could see the pain.
You kill any of them heathens?
Not as I could see.
Nettles shrugged.
Wouldn't help Missy here much anyhow, or her folks. He's up on the hill yonder.
His big hand tightened on the girl's shoulder. Gideon felt unaccountable anger against the dead family.
They know the danger. That little girl could be laying up there with them. What made them come out here all by themselves?
Nettles turned his head to look softly at the girl. Her dusty face was stained by dried tears. She snuggled quietly against him, worn out from crying.
They was poor folks looking for something of their own. White folks, but they wasn't free. They come here looking for freedom. Me and you Ledbetter, we ought to understand that.
Gideon nodded, but he didn't really understand. Putting themselves at the mercy of every roving band of Indians seemed a long way from his notion of freedom. He knelt to look closer at Nettle's wound.
I see somebody pulled the arrow out.
Done it myself. Everybody else was busy.
You can't ride that away.
Could if I had to. But Lieutenant says they'll hitch horses to these folks' wagon and haul me and Missy back to Concho. Lieutenant figures on going ahead after them Indians.
They already got away.
They can be followed. They can be chastised to show them that they can't do such as they done here and get away with it. I expect you'll be going with the bunch that goes. Now you prove to the lieutenant what you can do.
Ain't important to me what the lieutenant thinks.
Anger leaped into Nettles' eyes.
It is important. You're a soldier. Show you're a good one.
He softened a little.
The lieutenant's a better man than you know, Ledbetter. He's got his weaknesses. But that just goes to show he's a man like the rest of us. Time will come, you'll know he done you a favor.
Damn hard to see how.
You're mighty close to being insubordinate, Ledbetter. Now, if you don't want to clean out the sinks with Finley, you mind what you say.
Yes, sir.
Gideon didn't care that he was not supposed to sir a sergeant.
You gonna be all right?
I've had holes jabbed in me before.
Nettles looked again at the girl. A tear rolled down his dark, dusty cheek.
I'll heal sooner than little Missy here.
Lieutenant Hollander rode up and sat in the saddle, his expression somber.
I'm sorry, Esau. I sure hate to lose you right now.
Gideon blinked. He had never heard the lieutenant call the sergeant by his given name before. He took it at first for disrespect, but a look at the sorrow in the white man's eyes told him it was spoken in friendship that went beyond military considerations. Badly as he hated to, Hollander was forced to divide his detail. He sent three men with the horse herd and one man to drive the wagon, hauling Nettles and the little girl back to Concho. He wrote a dispatch for Nettles to pass on to the colonel, telling of his intention to follow the Indian trail and render whatever additional chastisement might be possible. The lieutenant sat on the riverbank and watched the wagon start, Napoleon tied on behind. The recovered horses followed, so their dust would not complicate Nettles' discomfort. When the procession was safely on its way, Hollander rode back to his company, five men short. He faced Maloney.
What's the verdict, Pat?
You got some tired horses here and some tired niggers.
I would guess that somewhere out yonder are some tired Indians, too. You didn't answer my question.
They flushed like quail and scattered seven different ways. They probably got a place agreed on where they'll gather up later on. From here, could be a lot of places. The Big Spring, the Double Mountains.
If we follow one trail and don't crowd them, we ought to find the place where they come back together.
If we can follow it.
We'll follow it. I'm banking your reputation on that.
Maloney came near smiling.
I don't see where I got much to lose. The Army don't rank us ex-Confederate soldiers much higher than it does these Buffalo soldiers.
Well, maybe we can prove the Army wrong on both counts. Let's get started.
He glanced at the silent Sergeant Waters, giving the order with his eyes for him to take up where Nettles had left off. Gideon saw uneasiness in the sergeant's face, but Waters put the men into a column of twos. Hollander glanced at Gideon.
Charger, you and Jimbo stay with Maloney.
Gideon saluted and followed the civilian, who pulled up his collar against the chill of the north wind and moved in a northwesterly direction, arbitrarily choosing a set of tracks to follow. They rode until dusk the first day, trailing at a respectful distance behind Pat Maloney, while he struggled not to lose the trail he had arbitrarily chosen out of the several available at the start. The trail had not followed a straight line. Wherever a rocky outcrop was to be found, wherever the ground was bare and hard and resisted tracks, the Indians made it a point to travel. Once it had taken Maloney an hour to advance 200 yards, but he persisted, for he had a Scotch-Irish stubbornness not in the least diluted by his several generation status in this country. At last, he found where the tracks led straight again for a time. As the sun set, they made a cold camp and took their supper of hardtack and canteen water. So long as they traveled, Gideon could concentrate on watching the trail and being wary of entrapment. But in camp, his eyes drifted resentfully to the lieutenant, though he tried to fix his mind on other things. He stretched out on his blanket and turned away from the others. He heard the heavy tread of leather boots and looked up to see Dempsey standing over him. Dempsey squatted on his heels and spoke in a voice low enough that the lieutenant would not hear.
I seen you riding to the front today, Gid. You kill any?
Gideon shook his head.
Did you?
Didn't try to. Them Indians didn't do nothing to us.
Didn't you see them dead people there by the river?
I seen them. They wasn't a one of them black.
Just the same, they was murdered.
Them people were stealing the land the way the Indians see it. White folks ain't ever gonna let you have no land, kid. But if they did, and somebody come along and stole it, wouldn't you feel like killing?
Gideon didn't answer, but Dempsey did it for him.
Sure you would if you're a man. Them Indians are men. Me and you, we ought to be fighting with them instead of against them. The white man taking away our freedom, and now he's taking away the Indians' land. What's worse, they got us helping them do it. And when they got it, you thinking they gonna let us have any of it? Hell no, Gideon Ledbetter. They'll use us as long as they need us, and then they'll do to us what they doing to the Indian.
Gideon held his silence, for he knew Dempsey wouldn't listen anyway.
I hear there's black folks living with the Indians, even fighting on their side. We could go and join them. We ain't got no friends here.
He ain't got no friends amongst the Indians either. You seen for yourself what they done to Leatherman and Ripley last summer.
I bet you them two tried to fight instead of make treaty.
Dempsey looked behind him, his eyes narrowed, and then leaned closer.
We could kill Hollander and Maloney, and then the whole bunch of us could go join up with them Comanches.
Gideon wondered for a moment if Dempsey had smuggled some whiskey along, but he realized that if Dempsey was drunk, it was on hatred.
You're crazy. Ain't a man in this outfit go with you on that.
Not even you, kid. After what Hollander and them others done to you and your yellow gal.
Not even me.
Kid, you like a baby kitten ain't got his eyes open yet. Time you finally see, it'll be too late.
He pushed to his feet and tromped away. Gideon drifted off into a troubled sleep, where Hannah came again unbidden, as she had done every night since she had left Concho with that miserable old woman. In his dream, he found himself fighting with Captain Newton, the thing he had really wanted to do, instead of turning his head away and taking the officer's whipping. He had the captain by the throat when a hand gripped his shoulder and shook him hard.
What?
He sat upright. Guard. Gideon shivered at the sudden cold. He felt as tired as when he had stretched out on the ground. He pushed stiffly to leaden feet, for he had not removed his boots. He wrapped the blanket around him to ward off the bite of the north wind, picked up his rifle, and followed Jimbo to the picket line. The horses stood quietly, taking their needed rest.
Wished I was a horse. They never stand guard duty.
Gideon looked in the direction where Hollander had rolled out his blanket.
Just as well wish you was a lieutenant. They don't either.
But in a while, he saw a vague shape moving toward him in the stingy light of the waning moon.
Who's on guard?
Gideon didn't answer.
Me and Gideon?
Hollander stopped a pace from Gideon.
Well, Charger, I hope you're awake and alert.
Ain't slept much, sir.
Neither have I. Maybe I can sleep better now, knowing who's on guard.
He waited as if he expected Gideon to thank him for the compliment. It was a long wait.
Charger, a wall has come up between you and me. We need to talk it out.
Gideon remembered Nettle's warning about insubordination. He measured his words carefully.
Seems to me like it's all been said.
Perhaps not. Charger, I never had any wish to hurt you. If I'd known you felt so strongly about that woman, I might...
You wouldn't have told me.
No, I wouldn't. I had a hunch you were seeing her, but I didn't know it was serious with you. I assumed you were like the rest of us, just taking a little pleasant diversion.
She wasn't no diversion to me. I was setting my mind to marry her.
I had no idea.
Maybe we just better not talk about it no more. There ain't no turning back what's been done.
I suppose. But I've never had a soldier on my conscience before, black or white. I'm sorry, Charger.
Name's Gideon. Gideon Ledbetter.
You'll always be Charger to me.
I expect that's where part of the trouble is at, Lieutenant. Charger is somebody you just made up in your mind. A make-believe nigger you've been trying to turn me into. But I ain't no Charger. I'm Gideon Ledbetter. And that's who I'll be when I go to my grave.
Hollander walked back toward his blanket. Jimbo came up when the officer was out of hearing.
Kid, you as crazy as Dempsey. You gonna get yourself thrown in the guardhouse.
How come you listening?
It was loud enough. You could have lied to that lieutenant a little bit. Told him you done forgot about that yellow gal. Ain't no sin in a good lie. He'd have gone off happy and maybe give you soft duty when he get back to Concho.
I've been playing that game all my life. Never telling the white man nothing he don't want to hear. I don't feel like it no more. Maybe the army has changed me.
One thing it ain't changed, you still black. If I was you, I wouldn't be forgetting that so easy.
They were up at daylight and rode several hours, mostly in a walk, for the trail was difficult. Maloney compromised his religion several times in the process of picking up a new thread after the old one was lost. Eventually, while Maloney toiled with a tough problem, moving a foot in a zigzag pattern back and forth across the Indians' line of travel, Hollander let the men build small fires that wouldn't yield much smoke. They boiled coffee and repeated the previous night's slim supper, calling it breakfast. Gideon held Maloney's horse while the scout hunted for sign. Jimbo rode back to the nearest fire and fetched coffee. Maloney took none until he turned up tracks and was fairly sure about their direction. Then he gratefully accepted the hot coffee. The obscure trail led eventually to a small spring, or more correctly, a seep, near the foot of an oblong hill. Gideon could plainly see moccasin tracks and the hoof prints of two horses in the mud. The water had a suggestion of gyp, but it was not too bad to drink. Maloney, Gideon, and Jimbo filled their canteens before starting out to follow the trail further. The rest of the troops coming up behind did likewise. It was a cardinal rule never to leave a watering place without refilling all canteens. Maloney came to another problem, a rocky ridge over which a herd of buffalo could have trampled without leaving sign other than their droppings. Gideon read anxiety in the two white men's faces, but he knew that most of the troopers would be just as happy if it turned out the Indians had ridden straight up that hill and off into the clouds. Whatever eagerness they might have felt at the beginning of this search had been worn away by the monotonous plodding, mile after mile, and the nagging hunger that could not be satisfied by short, cold rations. Gideon's own feelings were mixed. The initial drive, fired by the sight of those murdered settlers and by the running skirmish, had about run its course. They had come a long way since. He could only guess how much further they might still be expected to go. Slim rations and jippy water had left his stomach in none too good a shape. But he could not forget the fury in Esau Nettles' face. If they turned back now, Nettles would take it as a failure on the part of the troops, and as such, a personal failure. It would hurt even more if word drifted to him that the good folks over in St. Angela were chuckling about the burr-headed soldiers concluding another successful Indian hunt up onto the plains. Successful meaning they found none and weren't shot at. An hour dragged by and more. Without being ordered, Gideon and Jimbo assumed their usual positions not far from Maloney, guarding him, though attack seemed unlikely. Discouragement deepened in the scout's face. The feeling was mirrored in the droop of Hollander's shoulders as the lieutenant waited afoot with the rest of his men. The cold north wind set something to fluttering in the short grass. Curiosity pestered Gideon until he eased Judas over to give the matter a look. From the saddle, he saw it was a feather, but not an ordinary one. It was an unnatural crimson. He picked it up and rolled it between his fingers. It was dyed, the end wrapped in thin leather string, partially unraveled.
Maloney! Maloney! Over here!
In his excitement, he forgot to mister him.
If you found tracks led better, they're probably your own. You left them all over.
Gideon silently extended the feather toward him.
Where'd you find that?
Gideon pointed to the ground.
Come out of a buck's hair, maybe off a shield. Well, wind could have blown it from any place.
After dismounting, he bent from the waist, walking in a tight circle, studying the ground. He dropped to one knee.
By God!
He looked straight down, then raised his eyes. Soon he found another fragment of track, enough to set the direction.
Lieutenant!
Gideon saw Hollander's shoulders straighten as the two men talked.
God must have given that boy sharp eyes to atone for painting him black.
The tracks led the party on a meandering course between and around the rough, stony hills in a direction that varied from due north to generally northwest. At the foot of a red clay hill topped by a ragged rim rock, Maloney came to a mound of rocks freshly stacked, dirt still clinging to many. Gideon's brown horse shied away, smelling death.
Looks like somebody done better shooting than we thought. Some Comanche got this far and turned into a good Indian.
Maybe this be the one who wounded Sergeant Nettles before the sergeant shot him.
Maloney nodded.
You boys be sure and tell the old sergeant. He'll be right tickled.
I was hurt that the Indians put the dead folks up on a platform, closer to heaven.
Well, not the Comanches. His partner buried this one with all his weapons and stuff. Probably cut off a bunch of his horse's tail, put it in there with him so he could use it to ride to the happy hunting ground, not have to walk.
Maloney narrowed his eyes.
Boy, don't you ever laugh at somebody else's religion. Even an Indian's. Might be something to it. When the Lord gets tired of our errant ways and calls us home, we are liable to need all the help we can get.
Though the rocky nature of the country still was not conducive to plain tracks, it appeared that the surviving Indian had quit giving so much attention to obscuring his trail. Perhaps he thought pursuit would have ceased by now, or perhaps he was so shaken by the death of his companion that he'd become careless. For whatever reason, Maloney began making better time. To the northwest, a line of flat-topped mountains began taking shape, their distance painting them a dark blue. Ahead, still a long ride away, a pair of equally blue mountains began to rise out of the rolling prairie, well to the east of that other line, which marked the cap rock of the great staked plains. Gideon sensed that these might be the Double Mountains. At twilight, the soldiers were still riding. Maloney sat straight and proud in his saddle. A couple of times, shortly before dark, the scout reined up and signaled for quiet. He stepped down and stood away from his horse, listening. Gideon heard only the leathery creak of his saddle as his brown horse breathed heavily. Maloney tilted his head back and seemed to be sniffing the air. The second time, he motioned for Gideon and Jimbo to come up beside him.
Well, you boys have got good eyes. How's your smellers? Take a deep one off of that north wind. Tell me if you catch anything.
Gideon smelled nothing except perhaps the sharp presence of ice in the air. It might have been his imagination.
Wood smoke?
You sure?
No, sir, I ain't sure. Just got a touch of it, and then it was gone.
Maloney looked at Jimbo. Jimbo shrugged.
Maybe it was.
It was.
He glanced back at Hollander, sitting far behind them.
You boys game to make a little ride with me?
A ride to where?
Maloney pointed his bewhiskered chin north, where the tracks headed.
Yonder way. That smart aleck Yankee's been wanting Indians. I got a strong notion we can give him some.
What we three gonna do? Surround them?
We'll just make sure they're there. If they ain't, we don't have to say nothing he can snicker at. If they are, we can snicker for a change.
Ain't they liable to be some risk?
There was risk the day you take and leave your mammy's womb. There'll be risk of hellfire after you're dead. Think of the glory in it, boys, if we find them Indians.
Gideon found himself borrowing from Dempsey's philosophy.
They ain't gonna let you and us have no glory, Mr. Maloney. We're too dark-complected, and you're a Texican.
Maloney held his smile, but no humor was left in it.
They're gonna have to watch you, boys. You gone to thinking.
They made another dry, cold camp, eating bacon cooked during their noon stop when the small fires wouldn't show. They drank water, and for coffee, had the memory of noon. Gideon heard Maloney tell Hollander he wanted to reconnoiter and take Gideon and Jimbo with him. Hollander's eyebrows arched.
You expect to find a camp?
I'd just like to find out if there's anything ahead of us.
Hollander was suspicious, but he gave his consent.
If you find any hostiles, return and report. Do not engage them.
Maloney's smile bordered on being dangerous.
Oh, we'll save them for you.
They rode into darkness, making an arc from the direction the tracks had been taking so they would not obscure the trail. They had left all unnecessary equipment that might bump, rattle, or impede them if speed were called for. Gideon looked behind him and found the camp instantly swallowed up in darkness. He wondered how they would ever find it again. Maturity had taught him to question white men's judgment, but experience had taught him to keep the questions to himself. He laid the carbine in his lap and stayed silent. Every so often, Maloney dismounted and handed the reins to Jimbo or Gideon. He would walk off a few steps, listen, test the air. Finally, he seemed certain of what he was looking for.
There's a little creek yonder ahead of us. The Indian camp's a short ways up it. You got them guns cocked?
Gideon took long, deep breaths to compensate for the rising tension. Jimbo showed no more anxiety than if he were fixing to mount a new and untamed horse. If anything, he seemed eager.
I've never seen the Indian camp before.
You don't want to see this one too close.
They walked the horses, picking their way carefully, not to slip or slide on the broken ground that led down to the creek. When Gideon smelled wood smoke, he acknowledged that the scout knew what he was talking about. They came up on the east side of a small hill, and suddenly he was looking at several points of firelight. Maloney raised his hand for a halt. They stared, trying to make out the main features of the camp in the poor light of a thin moon. Gideon's heart beat quickly to the realization that he was gazing into a hostile Comanche camp, that he could be dead in a minute. He dimly saw the conical shapes of teepees set in a half-moon fashion, facing eastward. The buffalo skins were partly translucent, scraped down so much that the light of the fires inside made a faint glow, even where the flaps were closed against the cold night air. Gradually, as he concentrated upon the camp, he began to see wooden frameworks set up for the drying of meat, for the stretching of animal hides. The sound of a horse's pawing caught his attention, and he noticed that horses were staked near several teepees. Gideon's brown horse swung its head around, its ears pointed forward. It raised its head to nicker. Gideon froze. Jimbo reached out quickly and closed his fingers over the brown's nose, pinching off the sound. Gideon held his breath as long as he could, his heart thumping.
Damn horse is gonna kill me yet.
Just friendly.
I wonder where their horse herd is at.
Jimbo pointed off into the darkness, vaguely northwestward.
It's up yonder.
How do you know? You can't see nothing.
I just know, that's all. I got a feeling about horses.
Maloney was silent a moment, deciding whether to believe. He shook his head.
You know, sometimes you boys are so much like Indians that you scare a man half to death.
Gideon didn't understand Maloney's gift for direction, but he came to respect it more and more when the scout took him straight back to the place where the troop had halted.
Halt! Who goes there?
Who the hell do you think goes there? Go tell the lieutenant I want to see him.
Never mind, sentry. I heard him. So did any Indian within 2 miles.
Yeah, they're a little further than that, Frank, but not much.
Well, you found them.
That's what the army pays me for, ain't it? Hell yes, I found them. Me and these boys here. I think we're due a little bit more credit than we've been getting.
I'll see that you get a special letter of commendation written by the corporal of the guard. If I can find one that can write. What'd you find?
10-12 lodges, best I could see. We didn't ride through there and take inventory. A temporary camp, I'd call it. They probably figured to move on north to wherever the main winter camp is as soon as all their boys get in from the sachet through the settlements.
10 lodges doesn't sound like many Indians.
You damn Yankees are all alike. Greedy from the husk to the center of the cob.
The lieutenant hunted around for a bare spot on the ground.
Show me the lay of the camp.
The 2 white men knelt, and Maloney drew a rough sketch showing the creek and the relationship of the teepees to it. The moonlight was poor, but Hollander seemed to see the map well enough. Maloney told him the lodges appeared to be semi-circled along the foot of a hill, following the long bend of the creek.
Where's their horse herd?
Maloney followed Jimbo's intuition. He jabbed the point of his stick into the ground.
Right about there, up the creek.
Hollander studied the map and wasted no time making his decision.
We'll hit him at first light.
As they abandoned the raid, Gray Horse had helped the wounded 2 Beavers stay in the saddle after he was shot by the buffalo soldier, but there was nothing more he could do for his cousin. Only once had he looked back toward the river crossing, toward the dark smoke of the burning cabin. Though he quickly saw that he would have been able to outdistance the soldiers and get 2 Beavers away, he felt no elation. He was numbed by a conviction that he had destroyed more than those Tejano settlers back there. Unwittingly, he might have destroyed himself as well, for without power, a man was nothing. He should have followed the coyote. The longer Gray Horse rode, the more obvious it became that 2 Beavers was not going to live. He was able to stop the bleeding for only a while, then it would break out fresh again. The buffalo soldier's bullet had bored deep and lodged where Gray Horse could not get at it. The wound needed the attention of a medicine man whose powers were strong, not a warrior whose powers had been weakened, if not stolen away. He used what he could find to staunch the wound, dry grass, that great healer, the buffalo chip, always applying a split pear pad afterward. But life was ebbing away. He could see the gray color of death spreading around 2 Beavers' dulled eyes. Gray Horse looked often at the back trail. He had heard the bugle and had seen the soldiers turn back. Nevertheless, he had a feeling of being followed. Somewhere back there, an enemy came after him. Were he not saddled with 2 Beavers, he would circle back, coming up behind whoever trailed him. It was a measure the Comanche often employed, one which had brought death to many an unwary white man, and occasionally even an Apache or Ute who should have known better. The time came when even tying 2 Beavers to his saddle was not enough. Gray Horse regretfully eased him to the ground, spreading his blanket and laying him upon it. He knew he could do nothing more except be at his old friend's side when the soul departed, and to bury the body so that no enemy would defile it or wild animal devour it. Gray Horse did not know just when 2 Beavers died. He touched his hand and found life gone. He reverently placed the warrior on his horse and carried him to the side of a clay hill, where he wrapped weapons and shield and body together in a blanket and covered them with rocks. In another time, and under other conditions, he might have killed 2 Beavers' horse and left it for him to ride on the long trip west. But in recent generations, it had become acceptable to cut off some of the animal's tail and leave it with the body. A live warrior was likely to need this horse. The disaster at the river had not been expected, but war parties always planned for such contingencies. It was customary to split up and confound the enemy, meeting later at some rendezvous point agreed upon in advance. Ray Horse no longer felt the need for evasive tactics and reined his horse directly toward a spring south of the hunting camp. He rode Two Beavers' bay horse part of the time to relieve his own of the burden. Eventually, he saw two riders to the west, topping a hill and stopping to look around before moving down onto a broad clay-colored flat. He watched them cautiously until convinced, then quartered in their direction. They pulled up and waited. Limping Boy gravely eyed the animal which Gray Horse was leading.
That is Two Beavers.
He put an arrow in the soldier who killed him.
At least there was some compensation. Bear and a couple of the others were encamped at the spring, waiting. No one made much talk. All looked like dogs whipped out of camp. Bear avoided Gray Horse's eyes, which was just as well, and contrived to stay out of his cousin's way. The last of the men came eventually, and there was no longer any excuse to delay the homecoming. The thought of it made Gray Horse cold. He cut hair from the tail of his horse and smeared black paint on his face. The others followed his example. They rode off singly and by twos to straggle into the camp. Limping Boy held back, electing to wait for Gray Horse, who would be the last to go. Gray Horse sat by his tiny fire, drawing little warmth, delaying as long as he could the disgrace of returning in defeat. When he knew the others had had time to reach camp and spread the news, he arose, kicked sand over the fire to prevent its escape into the dry grass, and mounted his horse. He did not look at Limping Boy or speak. Riding into the cluster of teepees set along the small creek, he could hear the wailing of Two Beavers' widow in her lodge. He saw a handful of black hair lying in front of it, and a splotch of blood where she had laid her hand upon a piece of firewood and chopped at her fingers. It was his duty to go in and speak to her. He stepped to the ground and handed his reins to the silent Limping Boy. He tied Two Beavers' horse by the teepee, steeled himself, then opened the flap and stepped in. He was not quite prepared for the bloody scene. The widow sat before the fire, naked to the waist. She had cut her hair short and had slashed herself across the breasts and arms and legs. Blood still trickled from the stubs of two fingers. She recognized Gray Horse and listened as he spoke simply. He avoided using Two Beavers' name.
Your husband died a good death. He put an arrow in the soldier who shot him.
He expected little response and saw none.
His horse is tied outside. I will give you another from my own.
He turned and left her to her grief. He led his horse down to his lodge and tied it outside. The smell of wood smoke was strong and good. Green Willow had a fire going. He stepped through the flap and stopped. She stood at the far side, her stomach larger than when he had left. He strode quickly to her, circling to the left of the fire, and took her in his arms. They clung to each other a while.
Are you hungry? There is stew.
She pointed to an iron pot he had brought her from another raid. He looked in it.
Rabbit?
He had wanted buffalo meat. It had been a long and hungry trip.
There is not much meat left in camp. Even Eagle Feather has been out hunting on his bad leg. It is time we left for the winter encampment.
Gray Horse gritted his teeth. He would not go into that big camp hungry. Another indignity added to the one just suffered.
I will take some of the men out tomorrow. There must be buffalo left somewhere. We will carry fresh meat into the big camp. We will not go in begging.
They moved in a column of twos through the darkness, Gideon and Jimbo as outriders a short distance from one flank, two other troopers performing the same function on the opposite side. No sign of daylight showed in the east when they broke camp, and little more sign when they struck the creek some distance from the Indians. Hollander waited there for the sun to rise. Gideon watched him narrowly but silently, wondering why he couldn't have let the men sleep longer rather than have them sitting here on their horses, nervous and unstrung. He remembered times on the plantation when old Colonel had booted every slave out of bed long before daylight Then had them waiting in the fields an hour or two for the morning sun to dry the dew so they could pick cotton. It seemed an hour before the first color betrayed approaching daybreak, and another hour before enough light had spread that the men could see 100 yards. At length, Hollander and Maloney glanced at each other and shook their heads at the same time. Hollander motioned for the men to gather around him.
Surprise is the main thing. They have some horses tied in camp, so it won't help much to run off the horse herd first. We have to hit them so fast and hard that none of the warriors in camp ever have a chance to get mounted. They'll swarm out of the teepees like so many hornets, I think. It is not my intention to leave one of them alive.
There's women and children there.
We are not here to kill those, but we are not here to be killed either. When in doubt, shoot.
He studied Gideon a moment, then looked at some of the others.
It is not army policy to brutalize these people, but it is army policy to see that every transgression is punished. If you feel any weakening of your resolve, remember that woman you saw murdered on the Colorado.
Them reservation Quakers are raise hell.
They are there. We are here. When they are here, they may do as they see fit. Finley, come up here.
The little trooper obeyed reluctantly. Hollander eyed him fiercely.
I saw you hanging back in that other engagement. In this one, I want to see you in front of me at all times.
Hollander touched spurs lightly to his horse and led out, the men following him along the creek. As the edge of the sun's red ball pushed over the low hill to the east, he drew rein within sight of the first teepee on the creek. No alarm had been sounded. The lieutenant shivered, first sun pushing the cold down upon him. But he flattened a coat collar he had turned up earlier against the sharp wind. He drew his pistol and looked around him to be certain everybody was ready.
Bugler!
Most of the men had pistols in their hands, but Gideon was one of those who preferred his carbine. He had never come to trust a pistol. It seemed like a live thing in his hand with a will of its own.
Charge!
At the first notes, the soldiers and their horses rushed toward the camp. The lieutenant had fired toward the upper part of the teepee. It struck just below the point where the lodge poles were joined and tied and where the smoke vent indicated a morning fire already going. A man stepped through the opening. He was hit by the morning sun and 2 carbine slugs. In less than a minute, the vanguard had reached the far end of the small camp. Gideon's carbine smoked from shots he had fired at Indian men who had leaped from the high teepees to face the invaders. He didn't believe he had hit one. He whirled Judas around and looked back for the lieutenant. Through the gray swirl of gun smoke and dust, he saw him. Hollander's eyes and mouth were wide as he spurred into another run. Maloney's yell had chilled many a Yankee soldier. He plunged after the lieutenant.
Now we got him! Come on, boys! Woo-hoo!
Gideon rode neck and neck with Jimbo, who seemed drunker on excitement than he had ever been on whiskey. By the end of the second run, the camp's defense was finished. A number of women and children had made their way to the creek or across it. Gideon's observation had been hampered by the speed and stress of the action, but he doubted that a single adult male had survived. At the upper end of the camp, where the first rush had begun and the second had ended, Hollander pulled up and tried to survey the devastation. His gaze fell on Sergeant Waters. He made a sweeping motion with his arm.
Take the handiest 6 men! Cross the creek and bring back those women and children.
A few had fled up the hill to the rear of the camp. He sent 3 more men to encircle these and haze them down. The remaining men gathered around the lieutenant on horseback.
Now, we'll take this camp 1 lodge at a time and make sure we've cleaned it out.
He spied the unfortunate little Finley, who had hung back despite orders.
Finley, you make sure nobody is still in that first teepee.
Finley seemed tongue-tied and frozen.
Finley!
He brought up his pistol. Cowed to the point that tears began to run down his dusty cheeks, the little man hunched his shoulders, hesitated at the flap, then stepped inside, pistol in his shaking hand. Nothing happened. He came out near collapse. Big Dempsey watched the lieutenant in resentment. He disliked Finley, but he hated Hollander.
Proceed, Finley!
I'll take the next one, Lieutenant.
Dempsey's search produced the same negative results. A snarling dog challenged him as he stepped out. Dempsey ended the challenge. All up and down the camp and well to either side, other dogs were in a frenzy of barking. Gideon judged that most would starve now, for they were too dependent to thrive in the wild. They were not wolves. The women and children, too, would starve if they were left here. He watched them herded back across the creek and down the hill, weeping in fright and grief. A chill that shook him came less from the bite of early morning frost than from the desolation he saw in these people. Somehow, he had never considered Indians in terms of women and children. He had thought only of warriors, free and wild as the winds that searched these rolling plains and the broken hills of the Caprock country. Certainly he had known there must be women and children somewhere, but these had been only phantom wraiths, not quite flesh and blood. Now he looked at the terror in their eyes, and they were very real, very vulnerable. One by one, the teepees were searched. Gideon stared in wonder at the first one he entered, for it seemed larger inside than outside. The bedding and horseback accoutrements and cooking vessels arranged with considerable order, a fire crackling in the round fire hole at the center. A dozen strange odors assailed his nostrils. A trooper named Jolly walked to the open flap of the next teepee. Jolly stumbled back with an arrow in his shoulder. Two troopers rushed past him. One stepped inside swiftly. Gun smoke preceded him out the open flap. Gideon watched two friends pull the arrow from the wounded trooper Jolly and try to stop the blood. His attention was diverted by a woman's wailing. The one who had run to the first warrior felled in the rush was now keening a song tuneless and alien to Gideon's ear. He shivered. He sensed it was religious, probably a death or grief song. From somewhere she produced a knife, and he instinctively brought up his carbine. But she used the knife only against herself, first hacking off handfuls of her black hair, then slashing her brightly beaded deerskin dress. It fell away from her shoulders, baring her arms and her body to the waist. He watched in cold disbelief as she gashed her left arm from wrist to shoulder, then switched hands and did the same to the right arm. She made a slash just below her throat, sending blood streaming down her breasts. Gideon watched, transfixed, unable to move. The woman's eyes burned with a determination he had never seen. Lieutenant Hollander pulled his horse around in consternation.
My God, why didn't you stop her? She'll bleed to death.
Gideon had no answer. He had seen grief among his own people, at death, at enforced separation under slavery, but he had never seen the equal of this. He kept shivering. The woman's eyes went to Hollander. She seemed to recognize her husband's killer. From beside the warrior's body, she grabbed up his fallen bow and arrow. She fitted the notch of the arrow against the string and drew the bow with a strength Gideon could not have believed those slashed and bleeding arms still possessed. Hollander defensively aimed his pistol at her. The hammer fell on a spent cartridge. Gideon squeezed the carbine trigger at close range. The impact drove her backward. The arrow wobbled harmlessly past Hollander, and the bow fell from her hand. Through the smoke, she stared at Gideon with burning black eyes that seared his soul. She sank slowly to earth. She stared at Gideon through glazed eyes after the last flicker of life had gone. He lowered the smoking carbine, tears scalding his eyes.
A woman!
God help him, the first person he had ever knowingly killed had been a woman. The hand rested on his shoulder. He didn't turn to look, but he knew it was Hollander's.
Thank you, Gideon. She'd have killed me.
For one wildly resentful moment, Gideon wished she had.
A woman? How come it had to be a woman?
Not an ordinary woman. An Indian woman. They're not like ours. Or yours.
Yours. Gideon stared at the dark face and for a moment saw Hannah York. She too was dead to him. At that moment, he hated Hollander as he had hated few men in his life. Several troopers gathered around him. Through the blurring of tears, he made out the towering form of Big Dempsey.
Jimbo, you'd better take your friend aside and talk to him. The rest of you, we have work to do. We're going to destroy this camp.
Jimbo did no talking. He didn't have to. He simply had to be there. Gideon brought himself to look again at the woman's face. The chill still gripped him, and the feeling of sickness. The women and children were herded into one group. Maloney had counted the Indian dead, he reported to Hollander.
6 grown men and 1 big Mexican boy is all I can find. I don't think any got away. Maybe all that raiding party hadn't got back yet. I find 3 women shot dead, another one fixing to die. 1 youngin' dead, too. Run over by a horse, I expect.
It worries me there not being more men. Is there a possibility we hit the wrong camp?
Maloney shook his head.
Tracks led straight here.
This is the right camp. Look yonder, that little girl. See what she's got in her hand?
The small girl, possibly 4 years old, grimly clutched a doll. It was a faded cotton doll with a yellow face, with eyes, nose, and mouth of black thread. Gideon remembered that he had seen it in the hands of the little girl, Susie.
One of them dead Indians was this youngin's daddy.
Maloney sat on his horse and studied the captives. They totaled 12 women, mostly young, and 5 children.
What are you gonna do with them, Frank? If we burn up everything, they'll starve to death.
Would you have me shoot them?
It'd be a mercy, I expect. But the army don't pay me enough to shoot women and youngins, even Comanche.
Hollander counted them for the 3rd or 4th time, frowning.
We'll have to take them with us.
Maloney glanced southward, dubious.
It's a long ways to Concho.
These are hardy people. Seems to me that having them as prisoners at the post might give us leverage to help force their kinsmen onto the reservation.
Indians can always get themselves more women and kids. They're birthing new ones all the time. Look at them women. Half of them are in the family way. See the one with the beads? I bet you are pretty that she drops hers before we even get to Concho.
Gideon's eyes were drawn to another young woman, obviously pregnant, but not so far along as the one under discussion. Big brown eyes were the outstanding feature in a dark, roundish face. Because of those eyes and their resemblance to Hannah's, he felt a particular concern for her.
Pat, how good are you at sign language?
Maloney shook his head.
I never let myself get close enough to learn.
Try it anyway. See if you can make them understand they're going with us. Make them understand that they're to take along blankets and clothes and food enough for the trip.
Maloney beckoned a couple of fearful women into a teepee and handed them blankets.
You take, we go much far.
It took a while for the women to get the idea and to understand that the soldiers did not intend to abuse or kill them. Finally, they went to their individual lodges under guard, retrieving items they considered necessary. Hollander dispatched Gideon and Jimbo and 3 others to gather the scattered horse herd. Gideon was relieved for even a brief escape from the bloody camp. Big Dempsey was among the detail. As they rounded up the horses and started back with them, he pulled close to Gideon.
Bet you feel proud of yourself, Gid. How's it set with you to kill a woman?
Heat rose in Gideon's face, but he said nothing.
She'd kill that damn lieutenant if you stayed out of it.
They'd send us another one to take his place. Maybe worse.
With him gone, we wouldn't have to go back to Concho. We could take our horses and ride off.
Where to? East is Fort Griffin and Richardson. North and west ain't nothing but Comanches.
We go join up with the Indians.
You're crazy.
At least I ain't got no dead woman on my conscience.
Gideon hunched in the saddle. Hollander had decided to put the prisoners on horseback in the interest of speed. He stared worriedly at the pregnant woman nearest her time.
I'd leave that one, but I'm afraid they'll never find her.
Well, look at the bright side, Frank. You may count off more Indians at Concho than you started with.
Hollander managed to convey to the women an order to prepare the horses they would ride. From the teepees, they dragged out crude saddles of wood framing and rawhide. Hollander and Maloney puzzled aloud over the little food there seemed to be in the camp. Just some roots and berries, a little dried meat that looked like dog, but was probably possum or badger or some such thing.
Camp damn near run out of anything to eat while the menfolk were making their wild sachet. It's probably how come we didn't find many men here. They're out hunting fresh meat.
If that be so, let's leave them nothing but ashes.
Gideon brought himself to look again at the woman he had killed.
Sir, we ain't gonna leave these dead folks for the wolves, are we?
Hollander took a long, sweeping look through the camp.
Drag them to that cut bank yonder. We'll cave it over them.
An hour later, the procession pulled away from the burning camp. Maloney's tracking services were not required, but he pointed the way south anyhow. Gideon and Jimbo automatically taking their places as his flankers. Hollander insisted on a brisk pace at the beginning to put as much distance as possible between them and any straggling Indians who might follow. He also reasoned that the sooner they could get the women and children away from the country they knew, the less eager they might be to escape. The pall of dark smoke hung low over the site of the camp behind them. Maloney said this was a sign of bad weather coming. The north wind was raw and cold. Gideon pulled his coat collar up around his neck. He faced south and looked back no more, for his heart was sick. He had left something of his soul in that terrible place. They pushed the horses hard all day and took little time for rest. Hollander figured that the more exhausted the women and children became, the less the likelihood that any would slip away that night.
Company, dismount!
Near dark, he came across an arroyo with sides too steep for climbing. He put the prisoners into it and had the gravely silent waters station guards on either side of them. Gideon's sentry duty was to be after midnight on the picket line. He dropped off to sleep, dreading it, for he was paired with Finley. When Jimbo awakened Gideon after his own time on watch, Gideon arose grudgingly, knowing that the voluble little trooper would make the next 2 hours hard on his ears. He was surprised to find Big Dempsey waiting for him where the horses stood tied to the line.
I thought Finley was supposed to be here.
I traded off with him. I want to talk with you, Gid.
Gideon tensed.
About that Indian woman? I don't care to talk no more.
Time for talking is past, Gid. Time now to be doing.
Too late for that, too. She's buried.
We can't undo that, but we can make up for it. Our rightful place is up yonder with them that knows who the real enemy is.
He pointed his chin northward.
Now, I'm fixing to join up with them Indians. I got a notion you feel like I do. Come and go with me.
Gideon could not see Dempsey's face plainly, but he could imagine the eyes.
Them Indians ain't our friends.
We'll make them our friends. Me and you. We'll help them run the white folks clear back to their cotton plantations. Then we'll be free, Gid. Really free. Won't be nothing out here but the Indians and the buffalo and us. Won't be nobody calling us nigger ever again.
We ain't no wild men.
But on reflection, he decided Dempsey always had been in his own way. He could feel Dempsey's eyes burning at him.
You ain't going with me.
Gideon shook his head.
You'll holler for the lieutenant minute I start. You'll have to. Else they'll throw you in the guardhouse.
Gideon didn't see Dempsey's fist coming. He fell on his back, his head exploding. He was dimly conscious of Dempsey's towering over him.
I'd rather not treat you this way, Gid. At least I can't blame you.
Dempsey struck him above the ear with something harder than his fist. Lights leaped in Gideon's head and he lapsed into unconsciousness. He couldn't know how long he lay there before he mustered strength to push up onto his hands and knees.
Jimbo! Jimbo!
In a minute, several men had gathered around him. Jimbo was helping him to his feet. Gideon swayed and almost took Jimbo back down with him.
What happened, Ledbetter?
Dempsey hit me.
Sergeant Waters made a quick survey and brought Hollander the bad news.
He's gone, sir. If I count right, there's four horses missing.
Maloney had counted too. He had a little more bad news.
He's taking your good bay, Frank.
Ledbetter, take some of this.
Gideon didn't know Hollander had whiskey with him. He took the offered flask and forced a little down.
I want to know what, if anything, Dempsey said to you.
He said he was going to make friends with the Indians, sir, and fight on their side.
He took the three extra horses as a gift, more than likely. Figures to buy them Indians friendship.
Think he can do it?
Commanders are partial to horses.